Welcome to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio, licensed in Bella Vista, California, and transmitting from Round Mountain. Here, we explore the lives of triumphant humans who endure life's persistent challenges. Our guests are driven by passion and inspiration and live with a compelling sense of purpose. Their persistence, perseverance are brought on by tragic episodes or by wonderfully cradled lives. But for whatever reasons, guests will openly share their innermost feelings and beliefs that fuel their works. With determination, courage, and insistence, our guests are driven to put more into life than they take out. Please listen to these inspirational, triumphant human stories. And yes, I am Henry Cuenca. Today's guest was born and raised in a Southern California household with his mother, father, and eight brothers. With so many mouths to feed and money tight, meals were filled with simplicity: beans, tacos, and corned beef hash. And while meals were not in abundance, something else was quite plentiful: love. How much better could it be? Love, music, all in the confines of their 980-square-foot home. "Work hard, be honest, and get a college degree," was their parents' mantra for all their boys. And so, nine brothers all graduated with college degrees, all paying for their entire college education costs on their own while supported by scholarships. With a strong sense of spirituality, work ethic, and degree in hand, Dennis still felt there was something missing within his life. His quest to find what was missing ultimately led he and his wife, Mary, to journey to Spain for the 500-mile pilgrimage, the Camino de Santiago. Please listen to this heartfelt story. Dennis Grady, welcome to today's show.
Thank you, Henry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Dennis, I think, you know, I'd like for you to tell us about taking this short hike through Spain, the Camino. Tell us what the Camino is.
The Camino is an old pilgrimage route from France that goes to Santiago de Compostela in Spain. Compostela means field of stars. And it all started, you know, 2,000 years ago. St. James the Apostle went there and, you know, preached for a while, came back to his home in Israel, was, you know, martyred, and then somehow his bones ended up back there. So people started to travel there as a pilgrimage site to go and be blessed by this.
Are his remains still
there? They're still there in Santiago, and you can still see him today. I mean, the box that holds them. And so it kind of was, in a sense, like the California Gold Rush settling America. The movement across Western Europe to go on this pilgrimage brought more and more people and eventually caused settlements and things along the way. And so it really was a driving force in the settlement of Western Europe in a lot of ways.
I understand that last year there was over 300,000 pilgrims that made this journey.
I think I saw most of them.
Dennis, 500 miles is a long way. That if we left Reading on a 500 mile journey, we'd end up in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's about what it is. And
how long did it take you and your wife to complete this?
Well, we were in a larger group of 10, which really expanded. But it took us 33 days to do it. And, you know, ideally you'd stretch it out longer than that, but we were on a time constraint. People had to be back, and we had to meet people at various points along the way who wanted to join us. Mm-hmm. So it kind of forced an average of about a 16-mile-a-day, hike. And
What time of the year did you go?
Early fall. I think we left in right at the start of September, if I remember right.
And the weather was
perfect. I mean, it was just absolutely perfect. We were expecting it to be warmer. There was a storm to the north of us behind some mountains, and what happened is all the residual clouds drifted over us in patches of beautiful white puffs that just made it gorgeous and the weather real mild. I couldn't have asked for anything better.
And, you know, I've known that originally this Camino was a Roman trade route prior to St. James making it as popular as it was. So do you see any historical spots along the way of, you know, centuries and centuries of folks that have taken that same walk?
Oh, there's old monasteries and old churches. I mean, it's nothing like we have here in the United States. History goes back so far there. Everywhere you go, around every bend of a town, there's some old thousand-year-old church or cathedral or, you know, an old bridge, an old aqueduct. Just the history has been preserved there, and it's, you know, part of the walk.
Well, is it a walk or is it a pilgrimage?
Well, it's definitely a pilgrimage, although some people say it's definitely a walk. So you're...
Tell us, Dennis, why you and your wife decided, and those others that you went with, what were the reasons, really, the reasons you took this pilgrimage?
Well, I've been on it three times, so my first time it was more just an adventure, and I know my wife wanted to go, but it just didn't work out that first time, and I got hooked. you know, you're walking along with wonderful people. You are having time to meditate, to pray. You're celebrating when you get to your destination each night. You're laughing and singing. You're struggling. You're sweating. You're ready to quit, but you keep plowing along. And you realize, whoa, this is something unique, a real special opportunity to grow, to think, to look at your life, to look at what's going on in the world. And so for all these reasons, it was like, because I hurt my leg, I wasn't able to finish the first time, and it was like, I want to come back. And my wife, Mary, wanted to come back with me. So you kind of got a taste of this awesome experience, and we got to go back and do it. And this time I want to do the full 500.
And so you and your wife did do the full 500.
Right.
The full 500. With or without blisters?
Oh, some of my best friends are blisters. They were with me the whole way. I wouldn't leave home without them. They just every single step, you know they're there.
Did you have blisters?
All the way on both feet.
Really? But you persisted and you just went on.
Well, it's a decision. The Camino is, that's really what it is. It's not something that you, well, maybe I'll go, maybe I'll stop. If you make the commitment to go, you have to do it each morning. You get up and you put tape on your blisters and lube up your feet and throw on your clothes, get a shot of coffee, and you start walking. And you walk and you walk and you walk and you pray and you do all the other things. The next morning you get up and you go, oh my gosh, how far are we going today? Oh, we have to do 21 miles to make up for the bad day we had the other day where we only got in 12. And so, oh, we're going 21. And then, you know, and you just go, okay.
You're going to do the full 21 today.
You just have to do it. You just get up and you do it.
I know that there have been many well-known people, renowned people in the world that have made this retreat. Angela Merkel, the Prime Minister of Germany. Hmm. Shirley MacLaine. And Shirley MacLaine actually published a book, and she said that one of the most difficult things for her was not talking to people, which she took this walk to be in complete solitude, all within herself. And she said the most difficult challenge that she had was not the physical aspects of it, but the fact that she was not talking to anybody, which I thought was a real interesting perspective. I think in many ways I can see where that was very, very deep to take a contemplative, I guess you would say, pilgrimage to just tie yourself up by yourself. I think that was an interesting perspective.
It's there's no rules on this thing. You can make it whatever trip you want. Everybody who walks the Camino walks it alone. You have to get up and put your own shoes on. You have to get out and walk that walk, mm-hmm. climb those mountains, twist your ankles, get your water. You walk it alone, and yet you are never alone on the mm-hmm. Camino. Mm-hmm. So if you want to walk it alone, you can. But there are hundreds and hundreds of people. And if you want to go walk up with somebody, everybody is always welcoming, happy to have you join them, happy to share, you know, their water bottle. It all gets down to your own personal choice.
And this is an international flair, I guess.
Oh.
You started in France, isn't that
we
correct?
We started in France.
And you cut all the way across the northern part of Spain. North central Spain. Did you and your wife mix with other pilgrims?
Oh, of course, yeah. Uh-huh. We had people join us along the way because, you know, they're... feet would be sore, and one of the priests who would with us would go doctor their feet, and they were so grateful, and in tears they would join us. Can we be with you guys for a while? And they would join us, and another guy came along the way, and just people come, they're attracted to, I don't know, a group that is laughing and having fun, but also quiet. It's not like we walk together. At one point, there were 16 of us walking, and we were all spread out except for two here, one there, two, three. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like all 16 walk together. Mm-hmm. It's just you have your own day, share your own adventures, and at the end of the day, you get back together, or you might stop for lunch together, or, mm-hmm. but you might just as easily stop for lunch with a couple from Germany or from Australia, mm-hmm. from Canada. It is truly across the world. I mean, this is not any one particular country.
So Dennis, I assume that the other pilgrims, that these 300,000 plus pilgrims that take this, they're I would say that I guess this is a question. I would presume that there is a spiritual reckoning as to why these people are taking this 500-mile trip.
That's an interesting thing because everybody has their own reason. Like one of the first people I met, an Irish principal who just retired, and I said, "How long ago?" And he said, 2 days ago. And it's like, oh. And he says, yep, I just needed to get out and think about what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And another guy on this last trip that I went on, he had just nursed his wife through her last 5 months of cancer, mm-hmm. and buried her. And it was a terrible thing for him. He had quit his job to be with her during those last 5 months to give her some real quality time. And now he had no wife, no job.
Oh, my goodness.
Nothing. But he was a fantastic guitar player. He could play circles around me. So we would jam back and forth. He'd play a song, and I'd play a song, and we got to laughing and talking with each other. And I go, this is the Camino. This is it. You're sharing your life. You're sharing your story. You're sharing your hard days, your good days. And tomorrow it'll be with somebody else. And you may bump into this guy 3 days later, or you may not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all sharing together.
Dennis, where do you camp out at night? Do you carry sleeping bags and a tent? Or
no, there are hostels that they call albergues. Mm-hmm. And to sleep in an albergue, you have to get a pilgrim's passport, which is different than your normal one.
Mm-hmm.
And because you have that, you're like entitled now to stay in these special hostels. And they are only for pilgrims. And they're cheap. They can be donation, or they mm-hmm. can be 5 euros. Some of them are 10. Occasionally you get a little higher, and the higher ones will usually include a meal and whatever.
How long did it take you both to plan for this trip?
Well, this one, the big one, the 500 one, we planned for like a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So this is a very serious undertaking.
Yeah. The first time I planned for like a week and hurt my leg and had a stress fracture and realized that, whoa, next time I need to be ready. And it took about a year and a half for it actually to heal. I wasn't sure I was even going to make it through the first day, to be honest
really?
With you. And because I had done a lot of hiking, slowly trying to build it up, you know, 1 mile, 2 days, 3 mile, 4 mile, working my way up. Finally, the trip is here, and you look out, and you have the Pyrenees in front of you, this mountain range.
Amazing, absolutely amazing.
And you're going, am I going to make it over that mountain range? And you just start walking.
Interesting. Dennis, we're going to have to take our first break. And listener, we're going to be right back with more of our story. If you are just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio. And I'm Henry Cuenca, and my guest today is Dennis Grady. Dennis, we were talking about the preparation for this. It took about a year. I read where many pilgrims take this journey as a form of penance. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to our listeners that maybe don't know what a penance is?
A penance is a way of righting things, making up for things. And, for example, we walked with this one Spaniard who loved our group and wanted to join us. Didn't know a word of English, but we were able to communicate with him. He had a daughter who was crippled, and he was walking this whole Camino to, as, I don't know if penance is the right word, as expiation of whatever, to ask God's, you know, mercy on his daughter. And I guess it kind of comes from the standpoint of we believe that suffering of itself doesn't come from God, but it's something that we can use as an opportunity. Obviously, it means something, or he wouldn't have come down and suffered and died for us. If that's what opened the gates of heaven, there must be an inherent value to it, even though it doesn't come from him. So I think it kind of goes with the old silly thing about the making lemon into lemonade. I think evil causes suffering, but then with our love sweetening it, we offer it back as something special, as a lemonade. So the love that we put into it when we're going through it, when I'm walking up a steep mountainside, offering it in connection with Jesus, you know, going through his suffering, you know, just say, I'm going to join this with yours. And for whoever needs this right now, somebody somewhere needs this, I'm offering it up for this. And so that's kind of the theme or the idea behind it, that you can, it takes a really hard day and makes it into something really positive, wow, like an opportunity to, oh, you know, somebody can use this right now.
Dennis, a beautiful explanation, and I believe that I understand the height and deepness of your spirituality. Let me ask one final question on this pilgrimage, this trip that you took. What did you come back with within?
That probably two, three, four things that just keep coming. One of them, if you set your mind to do something and put out the work, you can accomplish just about anything you want. I mean, my wife and I look back and go, wait a minute, how did we do that? Well, we go for a two-mile walk now, and we're tired and ready to quit. And how did we do 16 miles, 21 miles, 18 miles, wow, and all up and down steep hills and all that? And it's like when you're there, it's a decision. You make a decision to do something. It doesn't matter how hard it is. You go ahead and do it. And you, mm-hmm, and community is huge. To do it with somebody else. To do it, anybody can walk that far. To walk it with a smile makes a big difference. To when at the end of the day and you're ready for a sweet, to have a little candy bar is just wonderful. To share the candy bar is even better. We got to where we would buy those 1 pound great big candy bars just for the fun of handing it out.
Yeah, sharing.
When you saw the joy, yeah, it gave to people. Or if you're going to buy a bottle of wine at the, you know, to sit down or something, you buy two, or you buy some extra beers and put them out there, and you buy some chips and put them out on the table, and mm-hmm, everybody shares and comes in on the deal, and they do the same back for you later, mm-hmm, and it's just wonderful. So the idea that we are community, that I think the Trinity is a community, and we're modeled after that. That's, we're made in his image. So there's this thing of love already inherent in him, and I think he puts that in us. We crave that. We need that. And so the Camino, you're walking along with people from all over the world, and you realize we're one big family. And so it just makes reaching out to people much more important to me.
Wow. Yeah. Dennis, I typically bring Kleenex for our guests, myself, and my engineer, but I'm the one that needs a Kleenex, and I forgot him. So, what a beautiful experience! I can say it's been very touching, Dennis, for us here to hear you speak this way. I'd like to transition. You are a retired person. Tell us a little bit about your life. You're a retired teacher.
Retired teacher. Yeah, I mean, grew up in Southern California, and more about the work.
Your work as a teacher.
Oh, my work.
Basically,
okay.
what you do now. You're retired now.
Yeah. Right? I was struggling when I first got out of college to find the right job for me. I tried this and tried that, and nothing just really hit home. And then suddenly I remembered a really good experience I'd had in high school where I had to teach the class. And I thought, whoa, maybe I'll try this. So I went back and got my credential. It was real hard. I had family at that time, and so had to make all that work and work restaurants at night to, you know, keep food on the table. Got the credential and then started working, and it was like, oh, my gosh, you get paid for this? It was like, this was wonderful. It was the most, just the rewarding experience of taking a bunch of young kids and having them reach and grow and smile and develop, you know, so.
Dennis, we have to take another one of those infamous breaks.
Hey.
And we're going to be right back, listener.
Sounds good.
You are listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Supported Radio. And, of course, I'm Henry Cuenca, and I have a very special guest with me today, Dennis Grady. Dennis, we were talking about how you became some footsteps that led you into teaching. But, Dennis, I know that you're retired. You had a very successful teaching career. You've taken this pilgrimage. What other things occupy your time?
Well, I guess when you're free, at church, there's always things that, you know, always things to be done. And I've always done the music at the Sunday Masses and the Saturday Masses and, you know, funerals, weddings, whatever. So, I mean, that can take a lot of time. Plus, as other musicians come and go, you have to kind of fill in the gaps. So right now I'm in the process of coordinating and putting together more music people, which involves, you know, just a lot of reaching out and working with Dios there. And
you have a beautiful voice, I understand. I understand you cut some CDs and you sing at church, and you also singing at school. But I understand you have a fantastic voice, and I'm glad you brought your guitar, because at some point I'm going to ask you to play a couple of tunes for us.
Well, don't believe everything you hear. I hide behind other good people. So
tell me the range of your activities, the volunteer work that you do for your church, and possibly other ways that you pay back to us.
Okay, well, I've taught the CCD class, the children's faith formation class. I did that for about 20 years. I did the preparation for wedding, for marriage, people that were going to get married. I've done that prep work. I've done communion, you know, handed out communion services and things. I have been on the parish council.
How many hours a week do you volunteer?
It can vary from week to week, but
we're
over there anywhere from 10 to 20, depending on the week.
20 hours a week?
Well, on some weeks it may only be 6 or 7, and then I would say average 10 hours a week.
You know, that's averaging 10 hours of good works for good causes is really a big commitment itself. You know, the average time, the average volunteer in the country is?
I have no idea.
It's 37 hours a year.
Oh, okay, well.
So I'm going to put you in the upper echelon for what you. Why do you do all this, Dennis?
Well, I mean, if there's a need. I guess as a teacher, my love was to bring students up higher in whatever way I could to a better understanding of life and all that. So now that that's gone, it's like, well, I still love doing that. I still love
teaching. Right?
I still mm-hmm. love getting people to sing. I'm not interested in, I want to say, performing mm-hmm. at church. It's more about if I can get the people to sing and really get them into their prayer life because of mm-hmm. that, then I've done my job. Mm-hmm. So it's simply about, you know, reaching out and getting them to come up. And mm-hmm. if it's getting...
Sort of like what you did with your students.
Same with the students, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, it's all about service. And I guess my mom modeled that in so many ways. So,
and we're going to talk about your mom and your family yeah. as the show progresses. And no doubt you did pick that up there in that family, right? Dennis, what do you... Do you have a vision for yourself for the future?
Well, more contributing whenever I can, more, sounds funny, more living, more.
Well, I guess you could say that helping is living, and my goodness.
Yeah.
Volunteerism in the country is drastically dropping. There are fewer and fewer people that are stepping up trying to help people. So I think that you receive a special reward for what you and your wife are doing within your parish and your church.
It still feels like being retired, like I'm not doing anything.
Right. It sounds like they're having a lot of fun is what it's
yeah. like. Yeah, well, there's that too. But it's like I'm wondering if I need to go back to it in some way, but then it would cut out on a lot of the adventures and things that we've been able to get into. Mm-hmm. So,
Dennis, what was your teaching for? What grade did you teach, and how long did you teach, and what was your basic philosophy in teaching?
Well, I taught 23 years in fourth grade, and then I finished off the last five years in kindergarten. And like I said, I loved it. I couldn't believe you'd actually get paid for this.
It was. You had to have been a special, special teacher.
Well, all I know is I wanted to take them from wherever they were, lift them up, not just academically, because you'll get the academics one way or the other, but that was a huge part of it. I really wanted to push them academically. Mm-hmm. But that, to me, wasn't a success. The success was if I taught them to love to learn, if I got them to want to learn, and if I got them to have compassion for each other in the classroom, mm-hmm. to realize that was the most important thing. You start with that, but then to get them just excited about something to where they wanted to investigate more, that's in educational philosophy, that's where I was trying to get, mm-hmm. rather than just fill them with facts and fill them with information.
Facts, figures, right, numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just get them excited about school.
A beautiful approach. In our opening, we talked about being born in a pretty big household with nine brothers. That's a lot of people.
It was.
that is an awful lot of stuff that's going on. Tell us a little bit of your childhood.
Well, first of all, I didn't realize it was a big deal. It was just my family. That's, you know, your family is your family, and that was all just normal that we had then. Nine boys. So slowly as we got older, a few things kind of set it off. I realized that, one experience that having the nine boys that I've mentioned before is my dad worked at a post office, and he handled the bulk mail. The Dodgers came in with their season tickets to send out some mailers, and my dad handed the man a cigar and said, "Just had my ninth son." And he said, "Your ninth son?" He says, "Oh my gosh, are they baseball players?" And so my dad said, "So of course, yeah, they all play Little League and Babe Ruth and all that stuff." And so he says, "Can you bring them out to the Coliseum?" With the Dodgers just played in the Coliseum years ago. And he says, "On Sunday, it's Father's Day, and I've been looking for a gimmick that would just, you know, be something special for Father's Day." So my dad said, "Sure." So we all got into our Little League, Babe Ruth, Connie Mack, all the different baseball leagues, got into uniforms, went down before the game, met all the Dodgers in the dugout. They all came out.
How old were you this time?
Seven. Seven. And Then, after meeting all the players, we all went out to positions in the field, and a guy named Pete Reeser, he was a coach on the team, he hit us all infield practice, an outfield practice, and we'd do double plays and the whole thing. He'd hit us a grounder, we'd throw it first, you know, just how they do before the game, they all practice.
Sure, yeah, warming up.
Yeah, yeah, and so we got to do that, but it was in front of over 40,000 people.
Oh, my goodness sakes.
Yeah, the Milwaukee Braves back then.
Did you meet any star players at the time?
Well, Duke Snider, Maury Wills.
Those are pretty famous people. Really, huh?
Yeah, yeah. You know, Tommy and Willie Davidson. Hank Aaron was playing that day, and some other just for the Braves. It's just a huge lineup. And to be out there 7 years old looking at a crowd of over 40,000 people, it etches your...
Well, absolutely it does.
Yeah.
So... I know that all of you, right, your brothers, speaking of your brothers, went on to school and all caught college degrees. And your father being a postal worker, I would presume that, you know, that it wasn't most affluent lifestyle.
No, it certainly
Tell
wasn't.
Us about that.
I mean, we were the kind of family where on Thanksgiving you get a knock on the door and you open the door and somebody's running away and there's a box of canned foods on your porch and most of them are dented or don't have labels. So it was always a surprise what we were going to have for dinner that night.
Oh my. I love that corned beef.
Creamed corn. And tonight it's creamed peas. So, dinners were... you know, I mean, we always had food on the table, but it was always an iffy thing for my mom. I didn't always realize that. You know, she told me later there were times where she would just say, "Lord, I don't have any money to feed these kids." And the next day, someone would have sent her a check, a cousin or something, and she'd get a check for $100. And back then, that was a lot of money.
Well, sure.
So it'd help her get by. Or, you know, when I was in third grade, I had a paper out, and she said, "Can you help pay the tuition this month?" And it's like, oh, well, yeah, sure, Mom. And so from then on, from third grade on, I was paying the tuition for, you know, all the way through the private schooling. And that includes high school and college, the whole thing.
So, you obviously worked. You had jobs.
Yeah, mainly the paper out till I was 16, because that's when you're old enough to get a real job.
Oh, and then work permit, right?
Yeah, the whole thing. And then you know, all the way through college. And it was... a wonderful life lesson. Mm-hmm. It was real frustrating. I wanted to go out after school for all the sports teams with nine boys. You can imagine you can play sports okay. And so wanted to be on the teams. And it was just one of those things you have to just go camp.
So the spirituality that is within, deeply within you, it certainly sounds as if it came from your parents.
Very definitely. My mom would just be on her knees a lot. You would, as a four-year-old, when all my older brothers were all in school, I'd walk down the hall. I couldn't hear Mom for a while, and I'd go in and peek in her room, and she was on her knees saying prayers, saying the rosary. And that was just part of her life. And we all would, you know, of course, you say grace with every meal. You say the rosary during certain months of the year, very important. You go to a daily mass. It was just, it wasn't, you know, Sundays, it was every day. You just went to daily mass.
Dennis, tell for our listeners that maybe really don't know what the rosary is, tell us what the rosary is.
Oh, it's just a sequence of prayers asking Mary's help, asking her guidance. Mm-hmm. People in all faiths ask each other to pray for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just ask Mary as one of our things. She's just someone we're asking. People, I think, misunderstand that and think we're praying to her. Mm-hmm. And it's not about praying to her. It's about asking her to pray for us. Holy Mary, mm-hmm. Mother God, pray for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something you just...
Obviously, a devout Catholic family.
Well, yeah, I'd hope we were. And, and so throughout it, you're also meditating on different facets of or phases of Jesus' life or Mary's life. So mm-hmm. it's a meditative thing, and it leads you into a deeper prayer of itself,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Tell us about your father. He was a postal worker, but tell us about your father. You're smiling. We want to know what you're smiling about.
Oh, my dad, he was the greatest in so many ways. He would, when he got home, all he wanted to do was get out and play with the boys. He'd get out there and grab a football and say, "Okay, let's get a game going." And then if there were kids around on the street, they'd come join us. But with all the boys, we could have a big enough game without them. And if they came, that would just make it be that much bigger. And
so he was one of the boys.
One of the boys on the street. And even after I grew up and was in college, the neighborhood kids would still come knock on the door and say, "Can Pop come out and play?" Yeah. So
he was one of the boys.
Yeah.
He worked 5 days a week or?
At least six. I mean, he did take Sunday off, but he worked the normal 5 days a week, but then he would pick up extra jobs to try to make ends meet for our family. They didn't have all the union benefits and what stuff they had now. It was just simple wages. Yeah. And
Dennis, one question. You know, if you're living in a household with the 11 people, Did you have to make reservations to use the the restroom?
Yeah, there was a.
I mean, in those days, their probably hot water tank was maybe 50 gallons. So you have a shower issue and you have a bathroom issue. There was no reservation criteria established for that.
Some would wake up early to be off to downtown LA for school, so they'd get up first. And then the next, it was kind of in shifts in a way, just by natural. Uh-huh. The way it worked out. So, but it was a challenge. It's funny, as we got older and more moved out, then we started expanding the house because they had a little extra money. Right. So by the time I moved out, we had all this extra room and two bathrooms in and all that.
Oh, you're in heaven. Big time. You slept in a bedroom with six brothers?
Yeah, one time.
How did that work?
That was wild.
Anybody snore?
Well, no. Not that I can remember, but it was... If we heard the footsteps coming down the hall, we knew, get quiet. Here she comes. And
and that was your mother.
My mom.
It sounded like she ruled the nest.
She did with velveted palm, velveted claws. You know, just
really?
She was – my dad was, you know, work, come home, rest. He just needed to come out and sit down. My mom – you just knew you didn't cross her. I didn't have to see it. It was just something, an unwritten thing. But we did sneak a few things in.
Of course you did.
A few times.
Of course you did.
I remember one time where we wanted to keep on talking after bedtime, so we snuck a garden hose into the bedroom, climbed out the window and got it, and we tried to talk through the hose from the bottom bunk up to the top bunk, and of course, to make yourself heard,
my goodness,
you have to talk louder than you normally would, trying to make the sound carry through it. So we heard the footsteps come down the hall again.
How absolutely amazing. Well, Dennis, we're going to have to take another quick break here. Listener, we're going to be back here in just a moment. If you're just tuning in again, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio, and I'm Henry Cuenca, and I have a very special guest today, is Dennis Grady. Dennis, there had to have been an awful lot that both of your parents obviously contributed to who all of you, the children, became. What lasting impressions or feelings or lessons did you learn from your father?
My father just had a complete faith, a complete confidence, so did my mother, in God, that when they prayed, it was always something simple. Like one time my dad's shoe the flap, the sole, the front of the shoe where it connects, was coming loose. And of course, he had no money to buy any new shoes. And he just told me later, he said, "Lord, I need a pair of shoes." And the trouble is, my dad has an interesting size foot. It's size 11E. And most shoes.
That's pretty wide, right?
Very wide. Most shoes won't, you know, these days you can probably find all kinds of things. Back then, everything was in a D. So it was hard to get a size 11E. But he just said that simple prayer, "Lord, I need some new shoes." And the next day, we get a knock on the door. And the lady, a couple doors down, comes down with a couple of big bags, and she says, "Oh, Joe and Ann, I'm wondering, with all your kids, you must have somebody who needs some shoes."
Oh, my God.
And she said,
"Really?"
Yeah. She says, "My husband recently died, and he had all these pair of shoes, and I'm sure somebody here can use them. The only thing is, they're a funny size. They're 11E.
Oh, my goodness sakes.
And so I think it was 14 pair of shoes.
Oh,
he had all kinds of shoes.
God.
And so my dad was...
what a story.
He was probably buried in one of those
pairs. Oh, my goodness sake. God bless his soul.
Yeah.
Dennis, I know that you had mentioned that you've had some remarkable, I don't know whether we want to call them epiphanies, but spiritual experiences. And one of them involved falling off a tree.
Well, yeah, I didn't quite recognize what it was at the time. I just knew something was crazy here. And when I was a kid, I used to love to climb to the top of this tree behind our house.
You were about how old?
I was 7 years, no, 8 years old. I was in third grade. Uh-huh. And I would climb to the top, the very top branch of this tree, and then reach out in front of me and grab onto some of the little twig stuff and hold on there for balance, and then watch the airplanes come in. We lived a block from the LA airport.
Oh, really?
And yeah, so
Westchester.
Right in Westchester there. And so I would just try to predict, oh, I wonder if the next one will be Western or whatever, and try to guess and just watch them come in and take off. And I just loved doing it. It was just a little kid, you know. They love things like that. And then one time I let go with my hand to get ready to start to climb down, and I don't know if a gust of wind hit me or what, but I fell backwards.
And from the top of the tree.
From the top of the tree into the branches of the tree. And it's like, oh, my gosh, they caught me. I can't believe it. And so I thought, if I move my hand real slow and don't shake anything, maybe they'll continue to hold me up. So I reached my hand out very slowly and got a hold of one branch, and then slowly, just slow motion, reached my hand over, and with the other hand got a branch, had my feet go down until I felt something, and then I climbed down from the tree. And I go, oh, I made it. And then I looked up to where I stood and where I fell, and there weren't any branches there. There was just the little twiggy stuff that's at the end of the, you know, things that you don't even need clippers. You can use little, you know, just little things, shears to clip them off. And that was all that was holding me up.
Wow.
And I thought, there is no way that could have held me up. Mm-hmm. But you're 8 years old, and the main thing you're worried about is, I don't want Mom to find out about this. She'll never let me climb that tree
of
again.
Of course.
So I'd never told anybody about it. But it was only as I maybe got into high school and got older and started thinking back on that and thought, wow, he worked that out for some reason. There's something he wants me to do. Mm-hmm. I'll always wonder what it is. Mm-hmm. And so
wow. You know, Dennis, I've had other guests on the show that have had very similar experiences, not falling off a tree, but rolling down a hill on a tractor and all of a sudden finding themselves back on top,
mm-hmm.
right? And so this is a divine intervention, I presume. Dennis, who is your mentor? I mean, who inspired you during your life?
Well, first of all, you know, my mom and dad were just the immediate ones. The nuns at my school were just so inspiring with the stories they would tell. They got me just so hooked on my faith. Going to morning mass every day hooked me. And then I saw a movie on the life of St. Francis when I was probably about the same age, probably third grade, maybe fourth grade. And I thought, whoa, this guy just is everything I'd like to be.
Really? At that age?
At that age. I just thought, this is the most amazing man ever. And if I could ever grow up to be like him, that would just be, the best. And then I read another novel going into high school right after eighth grade called Keys to the Kingdom. I think it's by A.J. Cronin. Anyway, it was a story of a priest going over and working in missionary China, and his long, hard struggle to make any accomplishment. And again, it was just like, wow, this is what I want to do. I want to be a priest. There's no question, I want to do this. And all the way through high school, it was my little secret. Well, I'm going and doing this and playing that and all that. In the back of my mind, I am going to join the seminary as soon as high school's over.
So Dennis, did both of your parents, did they realize what you were thinking about?
No, I didn't. That's what I said.
No, you didn't tell anybody.
Didn't tell anybody.
None of your brothers?
No. And I just wanted to keep it as my little thing. And then I started dating a girl senior year in high school and just realized, oh, you know what? This is a special thing, too. And it just, to have somebody that you just hold hands and, feel like you're in love and all of this. And I thought, maybe I'm making the wrong decision here. And so, it just...
So you took the right turn.
I took a different turn.
Yeah, different turn, right.
A different turn.
Yeah, good follow-up.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. And ended up getting married and having four kids and six grandkids. And So
you gave serious thought to becoming a priest.
Yeah. I mean, it was my life. That's what I was going to be.
Tell us about that movie or that video that you saw in St. Francis that planted the seed.
Oh, he just had such complete faith and love in God. You know, there's this one scene where he's in a African country, and the two soldiers who are approaching him see him, and they have some leopards or something, and they let him go and release him, and they come running over the hill to get St. Francis, they knowing these animals are going to be tearing him apart, and they get there, and he's just petting them and, just loving them, and I thought, yeah, this guy's cool. And just so many adventures or things like that where he offers to walk out into a blazing fire knowing that God will take care of him, not even the slightest hint of a doubt. And
that kind of just set a pace of your thinking.
Wanting to get close to God.
You did have another epiphany. I'm not really sure just when it was or what was going on in your life that when you had this spiritual connection.
It was something where I needed to make just a real major life decision and trying to decide which direction to go. And I just said, I have no idea what to do here. You need to help me out.
You were in prayer, I presume.
In prayer, yes, talking to God, just saying, I just don't know what to do, what direction to take here. And all of a sudden, this was in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden the room got as white as snow with sun on it. I mean, just the most white ever. And he gave me the answer.
Wow.
And so it's like things like that.
Pretty profound.
Yeah.
How old were you then, Dennis?
Oh, I was maybe 35, 40.
You were an adult.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it was just one more. I had no doubt already, but it was just a nice affirmation, I guess.
Well, absolutely. Go ahead.
That same affirmation, I have tried to, I'm going to say, pass on in some way. Mm-hmm. There are times where there are people that don't have any faith in God. There are wonderful people, beautiful people, and it's like, I want to just say, yeah, but you're missing out. And, I just don't believe in God. And it's like, I told one of them, I said that if you were camping at the coast and you went out to splash your face in the creek, when you walked away from camp and you got to this creek, Bigfoot came walking out of the woods.
Well, we're in the area of Bigfoot. So
yeah, right? Yeah. And so Bigfoot comes walking out, and he's grunting. You can hear him. You can smell him. And he walks up and splashes his feet and gets a drink in the creek and walks off. and you come running back to camp and go, oh my gosh, I just saw Bigfoot. I just saw him right there, right, you know, just back over there. And you replied, well, I'm sorry, I don't believe in Bigfoot. You know, that's just not something I believe in. I think that's, you know, a myth. And you go, you want to just say, you don't understand. You just don't understand.
Oh, my goodness sakes.
I saw him. I heard him. I, you know, all these things. And, but people persist. You know, it's hard to shake somebody's basic
core. I get your point. And I get your point.
And so, you know, if my life, if my music, if my anything can help somehow lead somebody closer to that realization, then my life would be a success.
Dennis, let me ask you. Do you think that at this point that your life has been successful?
Well, in a number of ways. I felt I was a successful teacher. I felt very good about my career there. I've raised four beautiful kids and love spending time with my grandkids. Last night, my son was coaching a volleyball, the Enterprise volleyball team. Went and watched him, you know, coach his team to victory and just enjoy knowing that my kids are wonderful kids, mm-hmm. and they're doing their best as, you know, parents or spouses, and that's victory.
So you're living your vision right now.
Trying to, yeah. You can always make it better. There's always room to get better. And
what is the biggest mistake you've ever made in your life?
Biggest mistake I've ever made, being too, I'm going to say, reserved, holding things in that I needed to share, being too an island at times when that did not serve me well. Mm-hmm. I have been just too, I'll take care of it rather than, you know, opening up more and sharing more.
Do you find yourself now adhering to that observation of maybe being too closed?
I find that I'm every single day getting better at being open. It's a daily challenge.
So it
was a decision I made as a kid. I mean, it got down to, you know, I wet the bed till I was in third or fourth grade, and it was just this thing.
I feel sorry for your brothers.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's so true. They weren't happy about that. But it was like, I have to hold this in. This was my secret. I can't tell any of my friends. And so I got to where it was kind of a thing where you just hold things in.
Right.
You hold things. You don't trust people because somebody could tell. If I get my brothers angry at me, they might go tell my other friends. Things like that. And it set up a bad habit of holding things in when I needed to share things,
mm-hmm.
and to communicate. Communication is something I really needed to do more. You'd think as a teacher I'd be good at it, and I was as a teacher. Mm-hmm. I just needed to in my own life.
Dennis, you certainly emit a togetherness completely just about in every facet of your life that we've talked about here on the show. Is there anything that you're afraid of?
Not doing enough, just not doing enough to be a good witness for God, to live exactly what He wants me to do, and mm-hmm. and that involves necessarily. I don't think if you ever get to heaven, I don't think you get to heaven alone. I think you have to. It's like the Camino. You walk with others. It's mm-hmm. it's all about bringing people and mm-hmm. and walking with people, not doing it yourself. And so there's always a goal of wanting to reach out more.
Mm-hmm. And I guess I guess you're answering that quest by all of the activities that you surround yourself with at the church.
Well, that certainly helps, you know, to be a driving force in that. And how successful I am at it, I can't say. But you just give it your best shot and leave the rest up to God.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, if you were to give advice, which I'm sure you've given to your children, but just generally, I would say that you have led a very, very successful life from all aspects. Your spirituality, your professional career as a teacher, and you've had segmented in various different capacities throughout your whole lifetime with parents and teachers and colleagues and church members and things like this. What specific advice could you give in lieu of our society today, of what's going on in our society? What basic advice do you think that would apply to people?
The only thing that really counts, the only thing you get to take with you, is the love that you've given and shared. Have loving God and loving your neighbor, the two basic commandments, be the guiding principle of any choice you make in your life. Everything else is just side details. Everything else. That you're going to have ups and downs, as I saw in the Camino. You're going to have hills and valleys. You're going to have flat spots. You're going to have struggles. You're going to have challenges. You're going to have joys. But really, it gets down to, are you loving your neighbor? Are you loving your God? Everything else, nothing else really counts.
You work on that every moment of every day.
I try to. I do my best, and I'm not always successful. Trust me. I am. No, don't get the wrong idea. Don't put any pedestal here.
No, not at all.
It is a daily struggle, is the best way of putting it. Mm-hmm. To be the kind of person you want to be.
I think that's humanity. I mean, that's true for all of us. What is typically the first thought that you have when you wake up in the morning?
Oh, I'll go make a pot of coffee and look out the window outside and look at the plants or the stars or the smoke.
Boy, isn't that a reality for here in Redding, California this summer, one of the worst summers that we have ever had with these forest fires.
And it's a give thanks. It's a give thank you. You know, thank you, God. This morning, the moon, big full moon.
Yes, it was a full
moon.
Right
in there. And so it's always a give thanks.
Right. So, Dennis, we're going to be pulling up to a close, and I'm going to just ask you to maybe say, we got a couple of minutes, and if there's anything else that you would like to say that maybe I passed over too quickly, or any closing comments, you know, please say if you have something to say.
Well, I guess I've been really privileged in my life to be born into parents that had a good, strong faith that were able to pass that on to me. I've been able to have a great teaching group of people that I worked with that were inspirational. I've had a great parish to work with, great pastors, great friends at church. I guess all I really want to say is thank you to so many wonderful people that have helped shape me into what I am, and I just hope that I can do the same for others, you know, to the best of my ability. You're surrounded by good people. We are community. We work together. And I think if we all work together, this country could be a lot better place. This world would be a better place.
For sure.
You know, it's all about learning that, working together.
Dennis, I want to thank you as we close here. Thank you very much for joining me in our show. It's been a truly wonderful experience for our engineer and myself and our listeners. You've just projected a different, entirely different level of existence, and I really appreciate your openness, and thank you very much for coming to our show.
Well, thank you, Henry. It was a real pleasure to be here.
You have been listening to community-supported KKRN 88.5 FM. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. Are you ready to support your local community radio? To become a listener supporter, go to our website at kkrn.org and click on the donate button, or mail a check to P.O. Box 188 Montgomery Creek, California, 96065. You can call 530-337-1101 to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio or to learn more. Thank you for listening to The Henry Cuenca Show, where we are in earnest working to make our community and our world a better place. Please tune in to my shows each first and third Tuesday of each month at 8 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Here you will listen to another triumphant story.